I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying a Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people about protecting your financial life from cancel culture and helping college students defend their First Amendment rights. Join us, sit back, and enjoy some free expression. Students demanding their rights is all too familiar on America's campuses, but most often those alleged rights have a leftward progressive orientation. What happens when the rights of conservative students are in question, or Christians or Orthodox Jews? The academic left is thoroughly organized and well prepared to flood the campus quad with an endless variety of protesters, not so much on the right. J.P. Kirby has extensive experience mobilizing young people through his work with groups like Young Americans for Liberty. He's developed a system for training student activists to defend free speech, privacy, medical freedom, and other prerogatives of individual liberty, and he offers that training through his organization, Student Rights, Inc. He's with us now. J.P., thanks for taking time to speak with us.
Absolutely, Bill. Thanks so much for having me.
What are the key challenges to individual liberty which young people are facing on campuses right now?
The biggest challenge that young people face on college campuses right now is the endless demand for them to sit down, shut up, and basically take whatever the administration says when it comes to policies that affect their free speech, their ability to defend themselves, and even where they live, whether that's in mandatory on-campus dorms or having the freedom to shop around for what's more affordable for them off-campus. Top to bottom, the biggest threat to student liberty is the college administration's assumption that students are theirs to control and their lives when they go to a university are fully under the purview of the administrators making the rules. And we really saw that play out on the biggest stage in 2020. I've been working on campus free speech stuff since before 2019 and then really launched into a full-time role of it in 2019. And we felt like we'd been making a lot of progress for free speech on campus. Campus administrators were hesitant to put roadblocks in front of students, regardless of their political views. You know, groups had done a good job holding administrators accountable to protect the rights of their students. And then 2020 comes around and basically hits the reset button on all of that and gave administrators this idea that whatever they say goes, they have no responsibility to respect the rights and freedom of the individuals on campus. And so it's gotten us back in a position where students are accepting this idea that they're no longer customers of an institution trying to gain an education. They are products for the institution to do with what they will. And so the freedom method that we've developed and that we give to students here at Student Rights, Inc., the intention is to help students empower them to overcome the obstacles to their freedom on campus and no longer accept that just because an college administrator says they don't have certain rights, that doesn't have to be the case. We can give them the tools to push back, win back their rights, and create a freer atmosphere on campus for themselves.
I'm old enough to remember things like the Berkeley free speech movement back in the 60s. In those days, kids were committed to openness, and it may have been more of a liberal point of view than a conservative one, but it was a genuine championing of freedom. All of that seems to have been washed away. What happened on college and university campuses to turn this thing so much around?
I think it's been a shift in the amount of control that the institutional left has been able to gain on the college campuses. They've been able to instill the idea that ideas are inherently dangerous in that there is a responsibility of those in charge that know what's best, quote unquote, that they have a responsibility to shut down what they view as harmful views. For anybody who is a person of faith, who knows history of institutions, we know that when the institutions of the world believe that they can micromanage people into believing what they believe, then truth is sacrificed, and whoever's in authority has the ability to shut down ideas that challenge their authority. And communities and faith that view the Lord or values or truth as more important than what, you know, the world's leaders are saying, whenever there are those thought camps out there, the standing authority wants to repress that. We see that in countries with dictators. One of the first things they do is go after the press and the church and anybody who is willing to stand up and that the leaders are wrong about what they're saying. They go after them and try to restrict their ability to speak freely because they fear the truth and they fear people's ability to speak out for what they believe in. And we don't. You know, it's one of the benefits that we have. We know that the truth will win out when we have the chance to speak it boldly.
Yeah, practically speaking, how do you approach that? What kinds of arrangements do you provide to actually help young people to be prepared to confront these situations?
The biggest thing that we do when we walk students through the Freedom Method is we have to make them understand how people in authority make decisions and how they change policies, what goes into their decision-making when they're confronted with the choice to restrict freedoms and repress people versus put in policies and protections of people's rights that will allow a broader range of ideas. College bureaucrats, much like politicians, they very rarely make decisions based on altruistic beliefs. You know, this isn't very often a place where we can stand up and be orators like in, you know, the old Greek times or the times of the apostles and give convincing speeches that will change the hearts and minds of leaders. So many times these people in authority are political animals that are motivated by keeping the positions of authority that they've worked hard to have. And so what we do when we teach the Freedom Method is we first get the students to understand that when you are going up against policies that restrict your freedom, you have to influence the things that these college administrators care about. Campus administrators care about good press for the school. They care about bringing in those alumni donations. They care about keeping their jobs by making the people that appoint them happy with the status quo. And so when you're going up against bureaucrats like that, you need to be able to see the playing field clearly and understand that instead of spending all of your time simply crafting a very convincing argument and speaking boldly, you need to be able to mobilize support among students, among the media, and among, you know, alumni donors of the institution to be able to bring outside pressure to the bureaucrats to get them to say, hey, it's going to be easier for us to change these policies and allow broad, robust free speech than it would be to ignore these students who are being effective in organizing their classmates and the people in the community. It would be easier to change the policy for good than it would be to ignore the pressure that's building.
How are these lessons conveyed? Do you go out to campus locations, or do you have students attend programs, or is it online? How's the system work?
Yeah, so Student Rights, Inc., every time that we get a new campus, a new group of students that want to take on a policy, whether that's fighting for their right to self-defense on campus or fighting for free speech, we travel to the campuses and we spend time with the students. We give them training about these principles that I'm talking about, the real nature of politics and bureaucratic power. And we give them training on how to effectively collect petition signatures on campus to get that information and start building a community on campus. And we give them training on campus of how to organize things like phone banks, where we organize the hundreds of people on our petition list to all call in to a university president or a board of trustees office and demand these changes. And then when we travel back to the office, we keep up with them virtually throughout the course of the semester to be able to give them that guidance and coaching that they need to carry these things forward.
Is there an example of a particular case that you tackled where you were able to turn a situation around?
One of the early successes that we've been able to see is at a school, South Dakota State University, working with a student group there, trying to change the mandatory on-campus housing policy there. This is just one example of a school that says, you as students, you're here to follow our rules and benefit us instead of being customers in the institution. First and second year students, you must pay the thousands of extra dollars a month it costs to live in our subpar dorms rather than being able to shop around in the community to find a place that's better for you to live. When we first got involved with this group at South Dakota State, they had been working for months to try and get the attention of the school. They'd have hundreds of petition signatures. We got involved and helped them get hundreds more petition signatures, but they weren't getting that meeting with administration. Every time they went to talk to the president of the university, they were denied and ignored. So what we did was we went to Brookings, South Dakota, and we helped them host a phone bank. We used pretty simple to use phone bank technology. We sat down in the room with five students that were part of this program, and we called through this list and we said, you've signed our petition. You agree that students should have this right. Can you take 5 minutes? We'll patch you directly through to the university administration's office. Tell them that you support this policy change and ask when they're going to have a meeting with this student group. We made about 400 phone calls. We got about three dozen calls patched through that afternoon into the university president's office. And through that pressure, that student group was able to get a meeting with the president of the university the next week. They said, okay, we can't ignore this anymore. Come in, we'll have a meeting about it. And that took us to the next level of negotiation with the school. That was an example of us being able to take a situation that was stagnant. Students were not getting the attention they deserved from the administration. We taught them this grassroots methodology to rally the other students on campus that they'd identified, put pressure on the school and get a result that they were looking for. So that's one that we're proud of from recent months.
It does seem that the leftward perspective that dominates so many campuses is pretty broadly shared between the faculty, the administration, and even other student groups. A young person who finds themselves in a situation where they have to stand up for their rights, especially if you're talking about traditional Judeo-Christian moral values, how do you prepare them to stand up against all of these various groups? Because it often is more than just the administration. It's really kind of a multi-layered situation.
The best way to prepare students for the pushback they're going to get is to be honest with them about what they're going to face, which is exactly what you're talking about. For example, we have a free speech battle that we're working on at the University of North Texas. University of North Texas has a history of censoring students and allowing mobs of left-wing students to shut down their opposition on campus. And so having an example like in 2022, a group called Young Conservatives of Texas were hosting a candidate for the Texas State House. His name was Jeff Younger. You may have followed his case. His ex-wife was trying to transition their child, and so he took it upon himself to not just battle that, but then he run for state office to try and, one of his platforms was outlawing underage gender transition surgeries in Texas, right? So this is a very common policy debate in the political sphere right now.
Right.
This is very common. A lot of candidates are running on this platform. So the group invited this professor. During the professor's speech, a mob of left-wing students entered the speaking room where Younger was speaking and shouted and screamed and didn't allow him to speak. They had to cut the event short and escort him out of the building. Now, instead of responding that, free speech means that students must be able to peaceably share their opinions and talk about things they care about, the university came out and said that they were supportive of the left-wing students using their quote-unquote free speech to shut down this event. Fast forward to last semester, our students are working on a petition on campus and working to try and use different means, these grassroots pressures that we teach, as well as any legal means that we're searching for, to get the university to backtrack and declare that they will no longer allow mobs of students to be able to shut down students that they disagree with. Because at the end of the day, we need to have open dialogue to be able to get this truth out here. You got to prepare the students to be bold in facing these issues. And one of the ways that you can help them be confident in the fight that they're fighting in the face of all of this opposition is to help them build their own like-minded community on campus by circulating a petition and gaining contact information. We're not just having them build lists, but we're having them identify like-minded students so that they can back each other up and build a strong community that can support each other. Nobody can stand on their own for very long without being exhausted. You got rock stars that can hold out for a long time, but when you're making change over a course of time in the face of all of this opposition, you got to be able to identify like-minded people so that you can support each other. So the biggest thing, whether it's free speech or any of these other issues that we can do, is help students learn how to create communities. Because not just in college campuses, but in our own different local areas of life, our biggest defense against tyranny is our neighbors, is the people that we have communion with around us, and being able to identify common values and stand up together and support each other and push them back.
Well, if anybody should be facing a situation like this on campus and need help, or perhaps if someone would like to participate in some way or support your activities, where can they go to find out information and make contact with you?
They can reach out to us at contact@studentrightsinc.org, studentrightsinc.org. We'll get an email and be able to reach back out to them directly to hear about the problems they're having on campus and offer the solutions that we have and get them involved in learning the Freedom Method and learning how to stand up against these issues. You can also check out our website at studentrightsinc.org. There's contact form there as well as a place to lend your support and offer donations to the organization.
J.P. Kirby, Students' Rights, Inc. Hey, you guys are doing important work. It's kind of exciting and kind of a little bit intimidating, actually. I applaud you, and I thank you very much for sharing this information with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate you taking the time to let us speak about this. I know that there are a lot of people across the country who are concerned about the next generation and their ability to defend the liberties that we have and that we care about. My message to anybody who's worried about the youth and the future of freedom in the country is to say, we've got to start investing. In the digital world, people are so subdivided and don't have a lot of contact with each other face to face, but that's where our strength comes from. You know, we don't stop going to church and do everything virtually. You know, we need to be face to face with our brothers and sisters and enjoy that real community. So invest in those young people, give them an opportunity to be in in-person communities, and that's what we're trying to help teach them how to do.
By now, the phenomenon of cancel culture is pretty much old news. We've all heard of journalists and commentators losing their jobs over controversial writings or saying the wrong things on the air, and it's business as usual when scientists lose grants or university professors are denied tenure for researching and publishing about politically sensitive topics. But did you know that banks and other financial service firms also kick customers out for holding wrong opinions? It's true. A one-time spokesman for Donald Trump was cut off because he helped a former president's son launch a news aggregator website. Firearms dealers have been denied credit card processing over the kind of merchandise they carry. A college student found his PayPal account closed after raising questions about racial preferences during a Zoom conference. There's one bank that's taken a stand for privacy and freedom of thought. My guest is Eric Olhausen. He represents Old Glory Bank, an Oklahoma-based financial institution that puts its commitment to First Amendment liberty right up front. Eric, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. So happy to be here.
As I understand it, Old Glory Bank is, in fact, an old bank. You've been in business for some time now, but you're responding to this new problem of thought control.
That is the case. We are actually in our second century of operation. The bank originally was founded in 1903 when Oklahoma was only a territory. It was not yet a state. That didn't happen until 1907. But just about a year and a half ago, a new investor group acquired the First State Bank of Elmore City, renamed it Old Glory Bank, and repositioned it to be a bank that really is founded on three primary principles. The first is that we're committed to promoting the greatness of America. You know, we love our flag, we support our military and first responders, and support the hardworking effort of Americans who make this country run. The second is that we are unwavering supporters of financial liberty, and this touches on the free speech notion that you mentioned. We commit that no lawful customer will have their account canceled, regardless of their speech or the industry they operate in. And the third premise behind Old Glory Bank is that we commit to our customers that we will not voluntarily share their personal transaction data with federal agencies or law enforcement, and would only do so if legally compelled to do so. And that's been a real topic in recent months, what's been revealed in that regard. So we feel that we really have a strong offering to those looking for a bank that shares their values.
How free are you to maintain these policies? I'm sure that you come under regulation from the Federal Reserve or the FDIC or state bank regulating officers. Can you really promise this?
We feel we can. In fact, we set about bringing this to the market in what is a more difficult process and approach than some online financial solutions. And let me just quickly say, first of all, we are a fully digital online solution. So while the bank has one location that's historically based in Oklahoma, we do have customers. Now that we've repositioned the bank, we've introduced the financial services online mobile app to where we have tens of thousands of new customers that have joined in the past 10 months or so. Every state of the union, so clear across the country. And there are a lot of online financial services that are not actually banks. So they work with a bank behind the scenes. It's called a third-party issuer or a BIN sponsor bank. We could have done that and just introduced the Old Glory branding and premise and used a bank behind the scenes as a partner. But we felt that in order to really fulfill this commitment to our customers, we had to be an actual bank. We had to have the autonomy of an independent bank that was the ultimate one calling the shots as to who could be a customer and who couldn't. We certainly are in a regulated industry, so we don't operate in a vacuum. To your point, there are regulatory bodies and agencies that we must operate under their guidelines. We're an FDIC-insured bank. There's a state banking commission in Oklahoma. But I would say, you know, we are a very lawfully operating business, and our approach really is an inclusive one. Our whole premise was to take politics out of banking, and we attract customers from all walks of life. It's not a politically positioned bank. It is a bank that's really analogous to free speech and being against censorship. And I think when people recognize that and recognize that we really are just promoting the foundational values of this country and welcoming all to bank with us, regardless of their views, I think ultimately those who maybe would be in a position to make life challenging recognize that we really are adhering to the principles that are unifying ones.
What is the philosophy or political attitude or whatever that's driving this situation? I mean, it seems at the very least presumptuous that a bank or a financial services company would try to inject itself into politics and try to restrict people's viewpoints.
I agree completely. It really is bizarre. You know, you see it in other industries as well, as far as, you know, actions by Disney and Anheuser-Busch and other businesses that feel their role in life is to inject politics and ideology into their operations. And I would guess in banking, it's referred to as debanking, that essentially is the cancel culture entering the financial system. The fact that it is occurring is what really attracted early on. We have some very prominent co-founders who joined me and my partner early on in bringing together Old Glory Bank, and that includes Secretary Ben Carson and Larry Elder, both of whom are on our board. Right. John Rich is a co-founder. He's a very prominent spokesperson for us who really believes, as a strong patriot, really believes in what we're doing. The former governor of Oklahoma, Mary Fallon Christensen, was a two-term Republican governor. She is on our board and a big proponent of what we're doing. And I think overall, it's just a recognition that banks ought to be there to bank. You know, to participating in the financial system is so critical to any individual or any business that we really do feel it's a fundamental right that ought to be available to everyone. It's unfortunate that other organizations see differently, but we did identify a real market need. And that's one that we're really pleased to offer to both businesses and consumers.
Well, if people are interested in finding out more about your financial services and how they might open accounts or do business with you, where can they go for information?
It's easy. Just go to oldglorybank.com to open up a consumer account. It typically takes just 8 minutes. You can do that online using your computer, just with your online browser, and download the app. oldglorybank.com. We have a really good customer support. Businesses take a little bit more paperwork that needs to be provided just to back up the kind of organizational documents and so forth that need to be produced. But we have very quick turnarounds and have just some premier service offerings. And that's one thing I would point out, that there is zero sacrifice in moving to Old Glory Bank in terms of product and service. We have a phenomenal online banking app. I've used major banking apps historically, and this is on par and at a level that typically community bank certainly doesn't have the scale to offer. But we, with our national focus and the scale that we have, can really deliver technology that is just exceptional. And we welcome all businesses and consumers.
Eric Olhausen, Old Glory Bank, fighting for financial freedom from Oklahoma. Thanks very much for being with us and introducing your service.
You're very welcome. I'm so glad to be able to speak to you and your audience.
Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Curris provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.